You're listening to South Florida's Good News Station, WCNO, Palm City.
This is God's plan for redemption, and it's good news.
We've seen what you can do, oh God of wonders. Your power has no end. The things you've done before, in greater measure, you will do again. 'Cause there's no...
Welcome to Wednesday Live, a production of WCNO Christian Radio, sponsored in part by Treasure Coast Christian Alliance. David wrote in Psalm 145, verses 11 and 12, "They tell of the glory of your kingdom and speak of your might, so that all people may know of your mighty acts and the glorious splendor of your kingdom." That's the vision of Wednesday Live: to edify, inspire, to comfort, to encourage, and to bless you. Let's see what God has in store for us today.
And good morning. This is Wednesday Live, and we are so glad that you're listening to WCNO in Palm City, Florida. And we have some friends in the studio today because we have some exciting things scheduled. And so great to have Aiden back with us.
Hi.
Intern Aiden.
Mm-hmm.
How are you doing? How's your family?
Pretty good.
Excellent. Excellent. Good to have you back with us. And know you had some... family situations that you've been out with your father addressing and such forth, and so we're glad to have you back this morning. Karen, we're missing part of our team here today.
Yes,
what did you do with David?
He is taking a well-needed break.
David's taking a well-needed break.
And the longest nap ever.
And the longest nap ever. Yep, for sure, for sure. And I have everything except the phone number for our guest that I need to call, so we're going to have to find that as well. And Barry and Laura, welcome.
Well, thank you.
Glad to be here.
Pull that mic right over, Laura, so it'll be close enough so you can get involved today. And we are wanting to... just thank everyone that got involved in prayer and share. That ran from the 4th through the 15th. It was two really great weeks. We had a lot of interaction from our partners, from our family, a lot of first-time callers, a lot of first-time givers, a lot of people got involved. And we want to thank all of you for your gifts. We ended up a little short. We had coverage for the first 5 months. It's a six-month operational budget that we look to raise. And so, Barry, we were probably around $29,000 short of that $205,000 goal. However, income continues to come in. So donations continue to come in.
God will provide.
God will provide. And so I want to just let you know that if you have one of those pledge letters, Karen, tell our listeners what they can do with a pledge letter. Don't trash it. No, don't do that with it. Don't trash it.
Yeah. No, you can read it first. Jonathan's nice letter to all our listeners. And within that letter, there was a return envelope and a card for you to fill out if you're going to send a check or a money order back in. You can fill out that card with all your information on it. And if you do not want to send in that card, you can just call us.
And, you can do that as well.
Yes, make a donation over the phone if you'd like to. And you can also, if you don't have the funds available right now, you can still call and just call it in so we can go ahead and add you in, and then you just send it in whenever you can.
Absolutely.
And you can continue to do that.
So give us a call. The phone lines are open. You can give any time.
That's right.
And if you call in and we're not able to take your call, you can leave a message. We'll get back to you. We'll call you back. Or you can, of course, give by texting online. You can do that anytime around the clock. And Taken Network is a sort of a vision that was birthed. And Barry, tell us where that is and your relationship, you and your wife's relationship with that and where that's going. And then we're going to see if we can get our guest that's going to join us, Rosalind, on the phone so we can move ahead this morning.
Absolutely. Well, Taken was birthed a little over a year ago from a dream that God gave us. And we woke up one morning at 3 o'clock in the morning, and God's given us visions for television shows, for acronym, for Taken, the Active Kingdom Entertainment Network. It was just amazing how God worked all this out and got it all done in just a matter of months. And now we've been on the air on Roku, Apple TV, Amazon Fire, and several other platforms. It's just been awesome. God's growing the ministry, and now we're going to be part of another big ministry that'll be launching sometime next year called WIN TV, World Inspiration Network. And we are so excited to be a part of that. WIN TV will be a like something that's never existed before. It will be a platform that will have nothing but faith-based content. Hundreds of channels that will cater to news, weather, sports, everything, movies, documentaries, anything that you could see in a secular TV, you'll be able to see on faith-based TV. Maybe the only thing would be maybe your local news, but we will have like world news and all that kind of stuff for the news people. So yes, so Taken Network is growing, and we're so excited to be a part of WCNO.
Barry, this has been a definitely a God appointment for us to make acquaintance. You are a networker that has just brought some tremendous friends and relationships into our world here at WCNO. And Laura, who I call a Northern Southerner now.
Yes.
Because I always pick on Laura because she and my wife connected like in half a second. And my wife is a Southern, she's a Southern Belle.
Southern Belle.
Yes. I deserved a lot of punishment over calling her a hillbilly and a ridge running hillbilly. I should have never said things like that. But anyhow, I mean, 43 years now married, she's put up with me. So she's still working on me like God. So God's not finished yet. Well, I want to welcome our guest this morning, Rosalind Franken. And Barry, why don't you just, Rosalind, are you able to hear me okay? Excellent. Well, we should have you on air now. Barry, you actually brought to me this opportunity. And so why don't you just introduce Rosalind a little bit, and we're going to talk about her book, Meant to Be, which I've read and I've reread, and I have corners bent. In fact, Rosalind, I have to tell you, I have a problem with your book. You have so many significant statements and events that are made that I have so many pages bent that I can't figure out what's most important in your book.
That's a good problem to have.
Yeah, that's a good problem. Barry, introduce. We're hearing a little bit of noise, Rosalind. I don't know if that's coming through or we need to call you back.
Is this better?
That is much better. Yeah, that cleared it up. Whatever the static was.
I just you're a little quieter, but I can hear you.
Okay. All right. Good deal. Barry, give us a little bit of background on how you met Rosalind and how we are blessed to have her joining us today, an author.
Well, Rosalind and Elliot are very good friends of Laura and I's. We met them through a mutual friend, Tony Belmont, from the National Comedy Hall of Fame over in Clearwater. And we've been friends probably now for over 10 years, I guess, maybe 9 years, something like that. Wonderful people. We met through Elliot's comedy show and magical routine. Just a wonderful entertainer. And then we heard about Rosalind's book and her previous books that she's done on health and nutrition, and then she branched out to do this wonderful book, Meant to Be, and what a blessing it is to all of us.
All right, and we still have a little bit of noise. Rosalind, we're going to see if we can't make this work. Otherwise, I'm going to call you right back. In fact, I think I'm going to do that. Karen, why don't you get some station information, and Rosalind, I'll call you right back. We'll try to make this reconnect and get a little better quality line. So,
okay, sure.
I'll call you right back. Thanks. Bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Yes, so station information. We're WCNO, 89.9 FM. Here to bring you the good news of the gospel of Jesus Christ through music and programming. And we're happy to be here. We're happy to have you, Barry and Laura, today.
Yes, stand by. All right, we're going to see if this is better. Hopefully it's better. It's still a lot of noise on the line. Well, we're going to work with what we have, Rosalind. For some reason, we do not have a good connection. I don't know if there's another landline or if we're on a cell phone, but we'll try.
It's a landline, yeah.
It is a landline. Okay. Well, we're going to use what we've got, and so let's move ahead. So, Rosalind, I read the story Meant to Be, and it is a powerful story of your parents. And it has a lot of history. It has pictures. It has some really, I can only say, gut-wrenching glimpse of what took place in our history that needs to be told, needs to be brought out. And so let's get started. Tell us a little bit about your parents, and let's talk a little bit about your book. You start out with that, and let's talk a little bit about them, and why did you write the book?
Sure. Well, I wrote the book because as I was growing up, I knew my parents' story. I had some inkling of what they went through, but, you know, when you're a kid growing up, you don't realize that your parents' story is anything special. It's only as you get older. And, you know, you might share with your friends as you get older, and they say, wait a second, your mother was 15 when she was taken by the Nazis, and she was held prisoner throughout Europe, and wait, your father was taken by the Japanese and was a prisoner of war in Japan and survived the Nagasaki atomic bomb. They're going, how in the world did they survive? And then they said, your mother was in Europe, your father in Japan. How in the world did they meet? How did they meet and fall in love? And then how did they end up in Montreal, Canada, where I grew up? And how is it possible that after all the horrors they experienced, they witnessed and experienced the worst of humanity firsthand, and they were able to make a beautiful life despite everything they went through? And I thought, you know what? I got to write this book. And then once I decided to write the book, it was like my father was in his early 90s. I thought, I got to write this and be able to put a printed copy, a published copy of this book in his hands. I wanted him to see it. My mother, unfortunately, had passed away many years prior, but my father got to actually not only have a published copy in his hands, but at the big book launch event, he actually signed copies for people. So you could just imagine what that was like for him. It was amazing.
Wow. That is super. And so tell us a little bit about the story. Tell us a little bit about your dad and your mom. Tell us some of that.
Sure. So my mother, as I mentioned, was 15 years old. She was born and raised in the Netherlands, just living a normal life of what any child should be living. And she grew up, you know, in a very traditional Jewish home where the Sabbath, the laws of the Torah, and the holidays, everything was observed with the greatest joy, devotion, and respect. And my mother used to love singing, you know, the prayers and the traditional songs because she had a beautiful singing voice. And then at 15, the Nazis came and took her and her family from their home. Can you imagine sitting there having dinner and at gunpoint these soldiers just barge into your house and order you to leave, you know, screaming at you in another language, and you have to leave everything behind, and you're taken from your home and you have no idea where you're going to. You don't know what's going to happen when you get there. You don't know what's going to happen. And when they did arrive at the first camp, my mother was forced apart from both her parents, her two brothers, and her oldest sister. She watched them literally being taken away, no clue where they were going and if she'd ever see them again, and she never saw them again. She lost both her parents, her two brothers, and her oldest sister, and her two remaining sisters were the only ones who survived, and they went through forced labor. They were sent to Auschwitz. My mother, I mean, anything you've ever seen or heard about Auschwitz, my mother was there. Like, when people asked her, did you see the movie Schindler's List? And my mother would say, why in the world would I go see that movie? She said, I lived it. I don't need to see that movie.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
And my father's side of the story, he was born in the former Dutch East Indies, which is now known as Indonesia. And he was captured by the Japanese at age 18. He was drafted into the Dutch Navy Air Force. And a few months later, while still in boot camp, was trying to escape at sea on ship. And his ship was taken over by the Japanese. And he became a prisoner of war for 3.5 years. And he, you know, also, again, slave labor, so many times, near-death experiences. The same thing with my mom, and it was just miracle after miracle that my parents were saved every time. The miracles, I mean, I'm sure that's partly why you have so many pages of the book with the corner turned, because it's just one miracle after another that their lives were spared. And to me, there's a reason why they survived, that it was meant to be that they should survive, and that why I'm even here. So I have to believe that. I fully believe that. But it wasn't just, I believe, not just God's miracles. It was my parents' fortitude. It was their faith and their fortitude that kept them going. Because you think about, what would keep you going when things are so bad? Why is it that some people committed suicide? Some people just gave up in their spirit. And my mother said, when somebody gave up in their inner spirit, they gave up that fight, that will to live. She said you could see it in their eyes, and within days, everything else equal, they would die.
Rosalind, let's talk about some of those miracles, because I don't want to just jump over those. Some may be listening today and just question whether or not the miraculous happens, whether or not God steps into to our world and our lives in some kind of a real way. But many of us have experienced things in our own life, but your parents, without question, had multitudes of situations that happened. I don't know if you want to talk about your father first or your mother, but both of them. I mean, while in the prison camp, I'm just thinking about all of these different incidents. Can you share some of them with us?
Well, one I love to tell is the one, if you'll remember, that when my father was in Nagasaki, and it was like bitter, bitter cold. I mean, anybody listening who's, you know, if they're not from Florida, and if they've ever experienced winter and know what it's like when your hands are so cold that you can hardly feel your fingers, that was what my father was going through when he was working as a slave laborer in the shipyards. And one day when his hands were just so bitter cold, he noticed in the distance, he saw that the welders, they get an extra canvas suit and helmet and mask and gloves and boots and stuff like that for safety, plus they're working over an open flame. So my father saw this and he said, wow, I have to get myself, I have to become a welder. And it meant to be, as he would say, that he, before he got drafted, he had actually graduated from technical school where he learned how to weld. But he didn't know if he was going to be good enough to get the job, so he volunteered, again, all in the hopes that he'd get all this extra layers of clothing and be able to work over a flame just so that he wouldn't be bitter cold all the time, right?
Right.
So he decides to volunteer, and he's waiting his turn. And all of a sudden, he notices on the ground, just picture this, okay? He's standing there, and he's waiting his turn, nervous. And he notices a few feet away from him on the ground, two pieces of metal perfectly welded together. And because my father was so resourceful, he just instantly knew what he had to do. So what did he do? He picked up those two pieces of metal, and he ran them over to the burner, and he started making it look like he was welding it. And just then, the inspector who was coming to inspect his skills comes over, and he sees this, and he looks at it, and he goes, "Wow, you're good. You get the job. Tomorrow you get your welding suit." And I said to my dad, when he's telling me this story, I said, "Dad, that's unbelievable." He said, "Rosalind, it was a miracle." He said, "I had just enough time to notice it on the ground, to pick it up, to run it over to the burner, to make it look like it was being freshly welded in just enough time to fool the inspector." And of course, if he was alive today and you were talking to him, he would tell you it was meant to be.
Meant to be. Yeah.
That's a great example, right?
Really is. Really is. I thinking about his time in the camp, you know, the different experiences that he was forced to, just the abuse that took place there, and something, I think there was a story about a super heavy object that was dropped by a crane, that if he had just been a little bit moved one way or the other, it would have taken his life. So many different incidents.
Oh yes, yeah, and another time, a big sheet from the ships, because he was working in the shipyards, the huge, huge, like sheet of metal, very, very heavy, like you said, on a crane, and it fell, and it just missed. It hit his. It landed on his foot, but at the end of the shoes, they had put straw at the toes of the shoes, like were too big, so they had like extra straw in the toe of the shoe. So it's just so that the shoes wouldn't, like, you know, fall
right
off, kind of thing. And he said it just landed on that part where it had the straw. He would have lost his foot otherwise.
Wow.
Right? And then there was another time where he was wearing a cap, and it just, like, skimmed his cap, like, just a fraction of an inch one way or the other, and he could have lost a foot. He could have lost his life. It was just uncanny. And then, of course, 3 months before the war, I mean, you talk about miracles, 3 months before the war, he decides to volunteer to work in the coal mines, right?
Which was a great...
My dad, when the bomb was dropped on Nagasaki, he was hundreds of meters underground in the coal mines. It saved
protected
his life.
Wow.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely.
Right? And then my mother, you know, if anybody's listening and they're going, yeah, that's just coincidence. There's no God in any of that. And I'm like, okay, what about my mother? Three times she faced death in the gas chambers and survived? How is that possible? Three times that they ran out of gas, or there was a malfunction of the gas supply, or something happened, and her life was spared. I mean, that's unbelievable.
And she was shuttled, what, between 11 different locations and
11 different camps and 11 different camps
and three times it was her number, and she was scheduled to go in and be gassed, but the equipment broke down at that time.
Yep. And before they could fix it, she was being put on a train and being shipped off to
somewhere else,
to another camp.
Wow.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic to see. I just see the hand of God in it. I see the hand of God in all of this. I see the hand of God with your father in the Japanese camps, and you know, thinking about when I read about the comfort station. I guess maybe I'd heard some of that, but I had not thought about that. I don't think in probably 30, 40, 50 years. I don't know. You know, it was something that I could not believe, that as a young man, your father was faced with all of this discount of human life, and yet at the same time, miracle after miracle is taking place to preserve his life, your mother's life. Talk about some of those incidents for her. I mean, that's huge. Three different times she was saved from the gas chambers. But wasn't there something with an officer and a false accusation that took place as well?
Yes, that is an amazing story as well, where She was working in a radio assembly plant. She was a forced laborer for, believe it or not, Philips Electronics. And this Nazi guard just decided that he would accuse my mother of sabotaging one of the radios. But, of course, she didn't do it, and so she refused to admit guilt to something she didn't do. So he just kept pushing that gun against her head. He had it, literally had a gun to her head, and he kept bullying her and trying to get her to admit it until she finally, imagine this little 15-year-old girl standing up to him and saying, you know, you want to shoot me? Then shoot me, because I'm going to tell you again and again that I didn't do it. Mm. And right then and there, he turned around and he shot dead the girl who we knew did it the whole time. Can you imagine? And he turns back to my mother and everybody thinking for sure she's going to be shot next. But instead, he just laughed. He just laughed and said, I just want to see how far I could push you. It was like a game to him.
Mm. Insanity. Insanity. Evil. Some people don't want to acknowledge that good exists or evil exists, that it, you know, that it's all just part of something that randomly happens. But, you know, there just is too deep of a rut of evil, and certainly we can see it. Tell me about the candles.
And that's the hard part of understanding things are meant to be. Then, you know, how do you accept that when the bad things happen, how is that meant to be? And those are the questions that my mother used to always say, never ask why. You can't ask why, because we can never know why.
The lighting of the candles and singing. I wish that I had a song of your mom's that we could play today, because it sounds to me like God gifted her with an amazing, extraordinary voice.
Yes, she has a beautiful, beautiful singing voice, and when I do my stage presentations, I am able to play a little bit of a solo performance that she did. I mean, that's a whole other miracle of how I managed to get an audio recording of her singing with a choir in Amsterdam shortly after the war is unbelievable. But she did. She had a spectacular singing voice. And, that was a gift.
And the fact that she decided to go ahead and light the candles, and I'm reading about the margarine, and you know, how was the candle made? How was even accomplished?
Course. Yes, I mean that what she did. I mean that was, imagine, you know, I see it in my mind, like all the prisoners gathered and you know, and living in terrible, horrible conditions, and there's my mother on a Friday night making candles from like margarine and threads from her dress, and manages to create candles and light the Sabbath candles and sing the blessing. And the Nazi guard who overheard her said, you know what? You're lucky you have such a beautiful singing voice, because otherwise I'd have to kill you. So even that, in that moment, he was able to appreciate, he was able to separate what he was doing from appreciating her singing voice. But her sisters told her, and everybody told her, that those moments when she did that, the symbolism of the light of the flame, that to bring light and joy amidst that darkness, I think was just so brave of my mother and so powerful, just so powerful. And the fact that he let her live, I mean, to me, that's another miracle when you hear of the stories of you would have thought that he would have killed her on the spot. I mean, she took a huge risk.
Well, obviously, your parents met at some point and were married, and you want to give us a little snippet of that part and how they met and how it ended up that they would be, I believe, in Canada?
Yep, ended up in Montreal, Canada. I mean, that's a long story, but, you know, in short, they did meet through correspondence and fell in love through writing letters and exchanging photos. And as I'm telling you this, I just keep thinking that I don't know if you know, but there is a movie going to be made about this book.
Oh, I did not know that.
A movie. And as I'm saying it to you, I'm just like seeing it in my mind, right? They fell in love through writing letters and exchanging photos, and then my dad went to to Amsterdam to meet her. He had already moved to Canada. And they took one look at each other, and they knew that was it. And I'm sure if you have the book in front of you there, and you look at the picture on the front of my parents, I mean, you can feel the love energy between them.
Sure can.
I think the way they're looking at each other, the expression on their faces, it's the first photograph that was taken of them after they met for the first time in person, after only knowing each other through the word on paper. And I'm thinking, just... It's a beautiful love story on top of everything else, that love overcame the hate and the evil, that they triumphed over tragedy in so many different ways. Because I know a lot of, you know, there are children of Holocaust survivors, for example, who had very difficult upbringings because their parents were bitter and fearful for the rest of their lives. But then there were people like my parents. I mean, my father wasn't in the Holocaust, but he was, went through the same thing, but in Japan. And my parents are role models for all of us in terms of understanding that you can go through terrible things in life, but still find joy in the aftermath. You know, even the times that we are in now, I remember at the start of the pandemic, you know, I had a friend of mine, she was just so down because she couldn't, you know, I can't go out to my favorite bar anymore and this and that. And I'm like, oh, honey, you got to read this book. Like, you think you have it so bad, you know?
Yeah, good point.
It could be so much worse. Like, putting things into perspective, my parents, after everything they went through, they always chose to be better and not bitter. They were the most honest, kind, compassionate, open people that you could possibly meet, and it's such a rare thing, and it shouldn't be a rare thing. It boggles my, the whole hate and evil thing that, you know, we see going on now. It's just like, we have a choice.
We
Why
really do.
We be kind and compassionate and treat each other with dignity and respect. Like, I just, it's so hard to understand. We have that power. We have the choice. God gave us that to us, and why would we choose the negative when we can choose the positive?
Absolutely. We are going to go to the bottom of the hour break. We're just going to promote the sponsor that assists with the cost of this program. And then there is a bit of a prayer from 2 Chronicles that I listen to. It was on air the other day, and I thought, you know, I really want to play that as a part of our interview. And so that's just about 3 minutes long, and then we'll be back. Hopefully you're able to stick with us, Rosalind, and we're able to talk a little more, because the challenges were not just in the early days, but your mother would face some health issues. You too would face some health issues, some family challenges as well. So the story of having faith and choosing to not live in the pain, but to live in the perhaps the promise and the hope of tomorrow is part of your story that continues to today. So hopefully you can stand by for a moment.
Absolutely.
All right, very good. We'll be right back.
Elohim kore vayikana'u ami asher nikra shmi alehem vayitpalelu vayavakshu fanai vayashuvu midarcheihem haraim va'ani eshma min hashamayim ve'eslah lachatatam ve'arpa et artzam. Yeshua omer lanu hayom
Yerushalayim, Yerushalayim, ha-horeget et ha-nevi'im ve-sokelet et ha-sheluchim eleha. Kama pe'amim chafatzti lekabet et banayich, ketarnegolet ha-mekabetet et efrocheha tachat kenafeha, ve-lo retzitem, hine bitchem yinatesh lachem. Va'ani omer lachem, me'ata lo tir'uni, עד אשר תאמרו, ברוך הבא בשם אדוני.
If my people, who are called by my name, will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and will forgive their sin and heal their land. Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the one who kills the prophets and stones those who are sent to her. How often I wanted to gather your children together as a hen gathers her chicks under her wings, but you were not willing. See, your house is left to you desolate. For I say to you, you shall see me no more till you say, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. Baruch haba b'shem Adonai.
Well,
this
God,
is Keith Masters, a street witness.
God talks about bringing healing to the nations, and the healing to the nations can only be brought by God. And so that's a scripture that I go to often and read that God's looking to his people and to those of faith who believe to seek his face, and that through that, healing can be restored. And we certainly desire that. We have Rosalind with us today, Rosalind Franken, who is the author of Meant to Be, A True Story of Might, Miracles, Triumph of the Human Spirit. Barry, you really brought this book to me and brought this opportunity to us here at WCNO. And so we are thrilled to have Rosalind with us. Once again, just give us a little intro on how you know Rosalind and her husband.
Yeah, again, we met over in the Clearwater area probably about 7-8 years ago through a mutual friend, Tony Belmont, who is the CEO and president of the National Comedy Hall of Fame, and also a producer for Alan Freed Productions. What an interesting man he is. That's a different story. But he introduced us to this wonderful couple, Rosalind and Elliot, and we immediately became friends. I mean, immediately. And I know they are Canadian, so they come and stay like half the year over in Spring Hill, Florida, and then the rest of the time they're in Canada. And so. And Rosalind has written other books, health and nutrition books. And then, you know, she told us about this book when we met, maybe she was still writing on it or just finished it up. But when she gave it to Laura and I, we could not put it down. We had read it. We probably read it in a week. I mean, we just couldn't put it down. Such a great book.
And I've ruined your copy because it's so crisscrossed and marked and folded and bent in every way. Rosalind, before we get to the rest of the story, how can people find out more about your writings, and how could they perhaps get a hold of you if they were looking to have you come in and share a little bit of your story in person?
Oh, I appreciate you asking me that. I'd love to give my phone number out. It's 813 813-0155. That's 813-803-0155. And, of course, my website, www.roslynfranken.com, which is a mouthful, so I'm going to spell that. It's ROSLYNFRANKEN.com, roslynfranken.com. And if you just do a search on me, you could find me as well, or my book, Meant to Be, and it's available on my website. And you can find it on Amazon as well. And I do presentations about my book, stage presentations, where I show more photographs. I share video clips from a documentary that was made in Canada that was nominated for a Gemini Award, which is kind of like the U.S. Oscar Award, I guess you could say, maybe. And so it's a very compelling presentation. And I speak for faith-based groups. I speak for schools. Young people need to hear this story. Young people have no idea and need to be told and taught about what this kind of hate and evil can lead to if we don't prevent it. Mm-hmm. There's so many valuable lessons for young people in this story about resiliency, perseverance, you know, hope, faith, all of those good things that kids need to know about. And if they're not getting it from their parents at home, they have to get it somewhere. And if they're not getting it in school, and they're not getting it on their social media and whatever websites or TikTok or whatever, you know, that's why schools love having me come in and speak to the kids and getting my book into the schools. It needs to get into the hands of young people. And I just quickly just want to add that I was actually the first guest speaker invited to address the class in Parkland, Florida, that was shot into by the gunman back in 2018. Mm. And the kids just, I mean, they jumped out of their seats to hug me after, just for giving them that hope, to giving them my parents as role models for how you can, like I said before, go through horrible things in life, but you keep going. You just have faith in God. You have faith in yourself, and you keep going. That will to live, that fighting spirit is within us if we allow ourselves to access it.
Rosalind, we have an intern that has been coming into the studio for the last several months, Aiden. And Aiden, you're 16, right?
15.
Mm-hmm. And I believe you had something that you wanted to share this morning. And before we go to the rest of your story, Rosalind, Aiden, share what you shared with me.
There's some controversy, but it is said that Eisenhower said, get it all on record now, get the films, get the witnesses, because there's going to be someone down the track of history, some I'm not allowed to say, will get up and say that this never happened. Mm. And I honestly think that's really true already. Like, it's not really shown in very many places, and I'm pretty sure I read that England has already taken it out of history books, and I just think it needs to be shown how much this can affect the world.
Thanks, Aiden. Thanks for sharing that. And you know, I was talking with Aiden earlier, Rosalind, and I asked him, I said, why is it so important that we remember? And I will never forget going to the Holocaust Museum and Memorial in Israel. And I've been there several times, but I'll never forget seeing the Spiegel display of the candles that were, as far as every direction you looked, all you could see was just a row of candles signifying the lives that were lost.
Yeah.
And then the photographs. And my wife and I were just broken. I never experienced anything like that. And I've never got away from that feeling of just looking at that stark reality and saying, how can humans get here? But, you know, the other day a man was in the studio, and he was talking to me about some things that his family, his father and other members, dealt with in their early years here in the state of Florida. And as he was talking, and we were just talking about the importance of remembering so that this never is enabled or empowered or allowed to happen again. Sometimes we just have to look back. But the power of the choice and choosing to not live in regrets or live in anger and bitterness is something that really is the tragedy to triumph that I see in your story, Rosalind, and it's powerful. So tell us what happened afterwards. So your parents, you know, they're married. Mom ends up having a health condition. And then I think you, too, have had some challenges.
Yes, yes. And my mother, oh, my God, she's such a strong role model. And what I learned from her, excuse me, I mean, my mother was 56 years old, which is my age right now, so that's kind of a...
You're young.
Home. But my mother was 56 when she was told she had cancer. So you think about that, Jonathan. Mm. After everything she went through, now she has cancer.
Right.
Like as if she hadn't suffered enough, right?
Mm. Right.
And instead of being that typical response, the victim mentality that so many of us get trapped in, right? Poor me, why right. me, why me? My mother said to the surgeon, looked him in the eye, pointing to the number on her arm, tattooed number on her arm from Auschwitz, and she said, "You see this number on my arm from Auschwitz?" She said, "Hitler didn't get me. My cancer won't get me. I have too much to live for."
Wow.
Her attitude was, "I survived the Holocaust. I... I'm now living my dream. I have, you know, I'm living in freedom. I'm married to a wonderful man. I have my kids." She goes, "There's way too much good stuff for me to just give that up. No way." Mm-hmm. And the doctors gave her 2 years tops to live with the strongest chemotherapy available at the time. We're talking back in 1983, right? There's been a lot of advancements made. And she had a very rare form of cancer called primary peritoneal cancer in the lining of the abdomen, stage 4. She was given 2 years tops to live. She lived for 21 years.
Wow.
And in those years, her cancer came back. I mean, she was never cured, obviously, but it came back 5 times. And if you ever asked her, "Sonia, how are you doing?" she would say in her little Dutch accent, she would say, "Me, I am like the Energizer batteries. I just keep going and going."
Wow.
That was my mother. So when I faced cancer at 29 years old, I was told the same 3 crappy words to come out of the doctor's mouth when he told me that he says, "You have cancer." I'm sitting there, what? I was in shock because I was 29 years old. How could I possibly have cancer? You just don't think of it at that young age. And after the, you know, initial shock and, you know, all the normal reactions, I just looked at my parents and I said they were my role models, and I turned to them as my inspiration in how I was going to beat my cancer. And again, it was a choice. I remember hearing about a young man who was diagnosed with the exact same cancer as me, Hodgkin's lymphoma, stage 2. He had the same treatment plan, very similar situation, but he went into a deep, dark depression. His wife ended up leaving him, and because his attitude was, "I'm going to die," and he just gave up. Whereas I was like, "Okay, what do I need to do? How do I get through this? And how do I, you know, manage this? And what do I need to do?" I just wanted to overcome it. You know, maybe it's genetic. Maybe I inherited all of that from my parents. I don't know, but. They were my role models. My dad had a massive heart attack at age 67, so I've got cancer on my mom's side of the family, heart disease and stroke on my father's side of the family. But he had quintuple bypass surgery, and the surgeons told him if he lives for another 15 more years after that surgery, he'd be doing well. And he almost doubled that. He lived for 27 more years.
Mm, wow.
And his attitude was, it's all about, he just kept saying, it's all about appreciation. That was his secret to longevity. He lived till 94.
Wow.
And you think about it, a lot of his fellow prisoners, too, I know in the Netherlands, they lived into their 90s, and you think with all the malnutrition they went through and the hardship and stress and suffering they went through, it's actually quite remarkable how many of them lived into their 90s. Really remarkable, if you think about it. But his attitude was, it's all about appreciation, appreciating every moment, and no matter what, never give up. That was his attitude. So those mantras, you know, you just keep going, never give up. Those mantras just stuck in my head. So when I face challenges in my life, that's the attitudes that I take. It's not always easy, but I don't like the alternative, so... So there you go.
There you go. Well, you know, in the book you talk about your father raising his hands up and, you know, thanking God and acknowledging that so many times, you know, the miracles were there. There was some story about a music book. And
oh, my God.
I would love you to tell that story because I think you can tell it better than I got it when I read it.
Okay, that story to me is, you know, when people challenge me, you know, on my beliefs of what happened in this story, they can think whatever they want. It doesn't matter because...
I'm with you.
You can't not believe when you hear this story. So what happened was, is as Barry mentioned, my husband is a wonderful comedy magician, and we were supposed to be going to Las Vegas. And the week before, my mother went into the hospital, which is, you know, not uncommon because that's what typically happens, you know, in and out of the hospital over the years. And I asked my dad, is Mom okay? And he said, oh, she's fine. So I didn't feel good about it, and I called the doctor, and he said, oh, no, this is it. Your mom's not going home again. Like, this is it. And I realized, oh, my God, my mom's dying. Like, I can't go away. I can't go to Las Vegas. It's like, sorry, honey, you're on your own. I have to go to Montreal to be with my mother. And I got this idea in my head, as you would say, probably God inspired me to say, I got to bring my flute with me. I have to play my flute for my mother. She loved when I used to play the flute, and I had not played my flute in years. And I brought my flute, and I started playing music for her favorite songs, and a lot of these were these Hebrew and Yiddish songs, which are very soulful, beautiful melodies. When they're sad, they're so sad they can make you cry. When they're happy, they're so joyful you want to just get up and dance, right? And I played all these different songs for her from my memory, and then I had a fleeting thought go through my head. As I was playing, I thought, oh, you know, if only I had a book of Yiddish songs, a music book, right, to remind me of all these songs I'd forgotten from my youth that I used to play. And so it was just a thought that went through my head. A little while later, the nurse comes in and says, we have a private room ready for your mother, because at this point she was still in a shared hospital room. So now, me being curious Rosalind that I am, I have to go down the hall. I've got to see, where is this room? You know, what's in the room? I have to know where it is and what's going on there. And so I go down to the room, and there's nothing in the room. It's a completely bare room. And as I turn my head to leave the room, I notice there's a bookshelf built into the wall with one book on the bookshelf. And the book is not standing up like where you could see the spine and read the title of the book. The book is lying flat. Now, how many people would have to go pick that book up? I don't know. Something compelled me to pick this book up off the shelf. I don't know why. I was curious, I guess. I don't know. But I'm thinking most people would just have kept walking out of the room. I had to go pick up the book. And I pick up the book, and it says on it in big, bold letters, The Big Book of Yiddish Songs.
Wow.
And I still get goosebumps when I tell this story. And I stood there with my feet glued to the ground. I don't even know how to express the feeling I had, because I had just, that short time earlier, had that fleeting thought, if only I had a book of Yiddish songs. And by me holding that book in my hands, that was it. I was like, okay, this is a sign. this is God talking to me, telling me everything is okay. Everything is exactly how it's supposed to be. Your mother is being taken care of. You have nothing to worry about. And that's what I chose to believe in that moment. And that is my truth. And I had a friend of my husband challenge me on that, and I talk about that in the book. He said to me, oh, come on, you don't believe that. He said, that's just one of those random crazy coincidences. It's nothing more than that. He actually laughed at me. And that really, really irked me. I guess I didn't realize in that moment he has no belief in God whatsoever. And then I realized what I was dealing with. And I said, okay, you know what? I said, look, you can choose to believe whatever you want to believe. I said, I'm not here to convince you of anything. And I can't tell you what's true and not true. I'm just telling you this is what's true for me. And if it helps me cope better with the passing of my mother, then that's all it is. That's what it is for me. So he just left it like that with him because, you know, people are not going to believe, and they're not going to believe, and I can't change their mind. That wasn't the purpose. I was just sharing, this is my truth, and if my truth works for me, then it's true for me. End of story. Mm. But is that not an incredible story?
It's it's a God story. It's just like your whole book. It's full of God's story, of God's interaction. And you're talking about the goosebumps. I just have to call them God bumps now because, you know, God shows up and he really is like knocking on our door and saying, you know, I'm here. I'm here and I'm available. And you look at the history you've documented in your family and the fact that you get to share that story and maybe challenge people's fears and maybe challenge their positions enough to where maybe their eyes will be open enough to see the reality of God. I mean, I don't know how someone looks at a sunrise or a sunset or looks at a baby's hand or looks at any aspect of life without saying, you know, this didn't happen by accident. But Roslyn, you have blessed us today by sharing from your life, your family, your story. And maybe down the road we can figure out why we should do this again. Because Karen, you've said nothing this morning. She's been sitting here. Anything to say, Karen?
Just, Rosalind, thank you so much for writing that book. I'm going to get myself a copy because I want to, you know, see and read about everything else. Because, you know, the majority of us have no concept of, you know, what really happened. And, you know, we see movies and books and stuff on TV, but, you know, we're still distanced from it. And I just feel today that your book has kind of opened me up to, you know, really seeing how God, he's such a redemptive God. And no matter how ugly and evil things are, God is always there to wrong the rights.
Or to right the wrongs.
Right the wrongs, sorry.
There you go. There you go.
And anyway, thank you for writing your book, Roslyn.
Karen is moved. I can tell she's moved.
And again, anybody can visit me online at www.roslynfranken.com. They can call me at 813-803-0155. You know, get the book. If people who need hope, I mean, people who doesn't need more hope and inspiration these days, right?
Yeah, we all do.
Yeah.
And you are available.
Opportunity to share.
Give us a little promo that you are available to share and in what places. There may be pastors out here listening today. There may be different organizations. Let us know. Just give us a little promo on that.
Well, I mean, I've spoken at a lot of different churches. I actually spoke at one in Newport Richey, Florida, just a few weeks ago, the Community Congregational United Church of Christ had me in, and they loved it. And I often get standing ovations is not uncommon because, again, people have not heard a story like this. It's so uplifting, even though I'm talking about the horrors of what they went through, but it's the triumph that people are just so moved and touched by. So any type of church, any type of faith-based organization, schools. I'm doing a huge campaign right now to school counselors because the teen depression and suicide is